Hey, you hear that? No, no, listen. You hear that? That's right, there's nothing. And that's all there will be when you go looking for intelligent, sensible, rational dialogue on political issues that also have a sense of humor. That's if you don't support FU politics. That's right, you can support this podcast. Go to patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. Subscriptions start at $1 a month, or give us a one-time boost at PayPal. Our address is FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Otherwise, when you want to hear intelligent discourse about Canadian and international politics, all you're going to hear is this. Yep, dead silence, or a bunch of bozos and pundits yelling at each other. Make the right choice. Subscribe today. I'm Ed the Sock, and I approve this message. If you don't like it, to hell with you. Now, here's your show.
For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus.
Hello and welcome to Mensplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner. This is men talking to men about being men in 2020, where we fit in a rapidly changing world, rapidly changing technologically, socially, culturally. And today we're going to talk about an issue which I am certain is going to raise the ire of some of the people who listen. Perhaps the majority of those who will be upset, perhaps, will be women. I want to state at the outset that that is not our goal. And our goal with this program is not in any way to diminish the reality of sexual assault against women, nor to diminish how badly women who have reported this over generations have been treated by law enforcement, by the courts. This is in no way to minimize that reality, and it is a reality. There's another reality, though, that we're going to talk about today, which is the reality of women making false accusations of some kind of sexual impropriety or abuse, and the effect that it has on the true victim in this case, the person who's been wrongfully accused, and what happens or doesn't happen to somebody who's able to wreck someone's life with a careless accusation, which isn't true. This comes from the story that broke about a week ago with regards to the Amber Heard, Johnny Depp divorce. Amber Heard had charged that Johnny Depp had abused her. She showed pictures of bruises. He showed pictures of bruises. A recording came to light as Depp is now suing her for defamation, blaming her for having lost the role of Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean. And a recording came to light from a couples counseling session in which Amber Heard admitting that she sometimes can't stop herself, that she hits Johnny Depp, that she's hit Johnny Depp, and that Johnny Depp himself was the one who was saying, we need to step back from this, we need to, you know, do something so we don't, you know, hurt each other, we need to take steps. And I'll let you read it, because if you want to look it up, you can see it and you can interpret it yourself. But it's very clear that this was not a one-way situation of physical abuse, and that it appears that Amber Heard initiated physical abuse against Johnny Depp. There are also tweets that have been offered into evidence from Amber Heard's parents to Johnny Depp, in which the parents stated that Amber Heard didn't want to file the charges of abuse, of physical abuse, but that she was forced to by her lawyers because they convinced her that she would be evicted within 2 weeks if she didn't, and that it's all the lawyers and she didn't want to do it and it isn't true, and the parents know it isn't true, but the lawyers insisted she had to do it because she hadn't been working much and her being without a home would have been problematic. And so the charges were that she filed, according to her own parents, were false and designed to keep her from being evicted from her home. Now, since then, there have been petitions that have been started to drop Amber Heard from her role in Aquaman 2 and to reinstate Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean, the new movie. That's an aside, but it does show that it does have an effect. And I will say that this is not something that happens only in Hollywood, because I happen to know two people who were friends of mine, one of whom was accused of physically assaulting his baby mama and her friend at an apartment in London, Ontario. And he had to go to court to defend himself against that. It cost him $20,000, and it was thrown out because he was able to produce a security camera video from a supermarket in Toronto, which had the timestamp, which proved that he was about 2 hours away from these women when they claimed the assault took place, so that it was not true. They weren't charged with anything. He walked away with a $20,000 bill and a mark on his record. Another person, an ex-girlfriend who was unhinged, was upset that he broke up with her. And so she harmed herself with a knife, very obviously self-inflicted, and for a few days told different stories about how it happened, that she was drunk and a stranger did it to her on her way home. And then she settled on that it was her ex-boyfriend who did it. And anybody who didn't believe her was enabling an abuser. And she put his name on the internet on lists of men who are abusers. Now, it turned out that there was ample evidence that he was nowhere near her when this injury occurred, that she, in fact, called and woke him up when he was at his parents' house asleep to come to the hospital when she went in because she'd cut herself deeper than she thought. She was charged with perjury and lying to police. She was convicted. But his name remains on these lists of men who are abusers. And every time he tries to take his name off there, it goes right back up. Because sometimes when men are accused and found not guilty, there are people who believe they were guilty, but they just managed to get off because of the treatment of sexual assault charges and physical assault charges between spouses, the history that the courts have in the way they've treated women over the years. So that's the long preamble and why we're getting into this, because I think this is a serious issue, and we have a lawyer with us, as well as having other people who had different experiences on our panel. Hafiz Narani is joining us from Vancouver. Hafiz is a digital marketing analyst and consultant and the producer of this show. Hello, Hafiz.
Hey, Stephen. How are you?
Good, thank you. Also joining us, Ryan Ballantyne. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here as always.
Andy Willis, always a pleasure to have with us. Thank you for being here, Andy.
Thank you for having me.
And the previously mentioned lawyer, Paul Doroshenko, is a legendary lawyer on the West Coast, and we're always very pleased when he joins us. Hi, Paul.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Good. So let's talk about this. First, I want to go around the horn and ask if anybody... The big concern I have, I'm not expecting everybody to have a story, but first thing I want to ask is, in the last couple of years, has your concern about being alone with a female coworker or a female in any place gone up? Have you had some anxiety that you did not previously have? Hafiz?
I don't want to say that this has affected me in any way. I don't think I've been able to think of it in that concept. Like, I don't feel this as a threat towards me in any way, or that this could happen to me. And that might be a problem in my own thinking, but also I don't think I have been put in any situation to ever make me feel as though this would be a threat. Maybe I'm a little still old school where, I've seen people that have had girlfriends that, you know, are a little bit more on the side that they would do something crazy and manipulative. But they showed signs of that well early on. In terms of in the workplace, I personally have always believed in keeping all my interactions with people on a very, very personal level. a very, very professional level.
Yeah, I was wondering where you were going there.
Professional level, unless they have put forward that they would like to get to know the rest of the staff on a personal level, right? I've always been taught, I don't really like the whole concept of ever, trying to flirt with someone at your work, where you work. That's kind of like a boundary I've always put up.
Are you not concerned that because when you work with people, you don't necessarily know them. You know them at work, and sometimes they're clients. You don't see them. You don't know them very much. Is there never in the back of your head a concern that a claim could be made that would impact your career and you would have very little defense because it's he said, she said?
And you know what? I get that. It would be upsetting to me if I was in that situation, because that's exactly what happened. I'd be in a he said, she said situation. Is it a fear I have? No, because I always believe that the truth will exonerate you. And
God bless you and your rose colored glasses. Ryan Ballantyne, I'm going to move on to. Ryan, have you had your concerns heightened in the past couple of years as a result of the Me Too movement and things of that nature, and people becoming much more aware of the types of harassment and abuse women have endured in the workplace and at home and so on?
I don't think I'm necessarily afraid of an accusation against myself, because I'm rarely in a situation where I am kind of one-on-one in a room where it could be a he said, she said situation. As far as that goes. But something that I have changed in my behavior is, I like an offside comment here or there, something that is something that, you get something that's a little suggestive or whatever. Typically, I make those in situations with people I know and certainly not strangers, because again, you can find the humor in it rather than the rather than any kind of threat or anything else. And someone told me that once. They said, I don't know why you can get away with saying things that absolutely a lot of people couldn't. Maybe it's because we just don't find you threatening in that way. But at the same time, I've also toned that down because I'm more hyper aware of how someone might feel after they leave the room rather than what's going on in kind of the in the moment. So I find myself biting my tongue a lot more than I used to.
Okay, so you've basically cleaned up your act a little bit as far as comments which could be easily taken as inappropriate and uncomfortable for women in the room.
And certainly they were inappropriate, but it was whether or not anybody felt uncomfortable. And again, knowing your audience is definitely one thing. It's in a room of friends rather than in a room of strangers, but at the same time, I certainly bite my tongue a lot more than I used to.
Okay, well, that's not a bad thing. What you've just described is not a bad thing. It's not necessarily the question I asked, but it is an answer that.
I don't feel afraid that I'm going to be put in those situations. But at the same time, seeing these situations played out in the media with false accusations, with even accusations that were, well, I thought it was totally harmless. Those things have caused me to change, even though I don't know that I was ever worried about being in that situation. I've also modified my behavior to reduce that possibility of any kind of misunderstanding happening in the future.
Okay. Paul? This isn't your area of legal specialty, but you are a lawyer. You've heard what we've said. Have you had any greater concern over the past couple of years? It doesn't have to be the last 2 years or the last 5 years. Are you less comfortable now being alone in a room with a female client, for example, than you were a couple of years ago? And just fear of somebody you don't know them, can take offense at something and decide to file a charge which is completely false?
I'm less comfortable now, and I haven't been comfortable my entire career as a lawyer. I've always been really careful about it because of that concern, but I'm less comfortable about it now. when I designed the office that I'm in now and when I built it so my office was so close to the reception desk and there was like a 1.5-inch gap under the door that anybody'd be able to hear what was going on for this reason, because you never know when later on somebody's going to recharacterize something to make you out to be a bad guy. You know, when I started my career and I was an articled student, our accountant once got me to dance on the secretary's desk. I was fully clothed and everything, and it was a joke, right?
Mm-hmm.
But years later, it was her birthday or something, and it was, you know, just something we did. We had a lot of fun in the office. And I'm friends with this person still now. But what if she was a, you know, somebody who was a vindictive person who had some bone to pick with me? You know, she could decide to recharacterize the thing in some way that would make me look awful. And that's a worry that, you know, you have to have in today's society. I mean, I get it. Lots of women have suffered some horrible situations they've been put in. And like, absolutely nobody should ever be in that situation when they go to work. But you also have the other side, which is the desire to believe people just on the basis of their allegation when there can be all sorts of other motives. You know, there's exactly. A judge who died in the United States recently. And now he's dead, and a bunch, you know, a few women, well, one woman in particular, has come out and made these allegations. Well, he's dead. I don't know about the truth of them. I'll never be able to, you know, we'd never be able to get to the truth of them. The guy's dead. But even if you ask him, you know, like, how are they going to weigh her evidence versus his evidence? You know, you give her all sorts of credit because she's coming forward and it's an embarrassing situation. So you give her evidence greater weight. And then you've got the guy who's like lived his life doing everything, you know, as good as he could, you know, trying to be a decent guy all along. And he's facing this and none of that matters anymore because you will give his evidence less weight because he's a guy. And there's been lots of guys with this propensity to behave this way.
Interesting.
So it is something that every one of us has to be alert to and none of us are safe from. And at the same time,
you hear that, Ryan?
We've got these women, a huge number of women who have suffered terrible.
There's
terrible
no question.
Actions.
Yeah.
And so you're sitting there trying to figure out how are you going to weigh that? There's been men who've been wrongfully convicted, and there will be. Don't just assume that because it went to court that it's right. But unfortunately, there's no way a lot of the time to sort out what the truth is. And the bare allegation, look at Johnny Depp. The bare allegation has fundamentally destroyed his career. And we all sit there and say, well, Johnny Depp's already got $500 million. But, you know, he's worked all his life to be a good guy. We all have the impression of him being a good guy because of that.
Including his ex-female partners,
exactly.
Who came to his defense and said he was never like this.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the one allegation, and we've got this desire to believe, and I get it. Why would somebody make such an allegation? Sometimes you can never figure out their motive. I didn't defend this. I had a friend who was charged with sexual assault of his sister-in-law. He was a chiropractor. He couldn't believe it. I mean, it almost killed him, right? He lost a bunch of weight. He lost all his hair. Ultimately, the thing went to court. He was acquitted. Lucky he was acquitted. Years later, she admitted that she made it up to gain favor with her mom.
Hmm.
You know, and these things happen. It's unfortunate, but they happen. And, you know, how would you figure out what the motive was? And you have to defend it. And you're, in that case, $60,000 later, you know?
Yeah, that mark on... There's all, as I said at the top, there's always people who believe that when somebody is not convicted in court, they did it, but they managed to get away with it. Going to go to Andy Willis. Now, Andy, you're gay, but that doesn't stop charges have, you know, being laid. I mean, there were allegations made against Kevin Spacey. There have been allegations made against Bryan Singer. a number of people, high profile gay men. So there is just, there's an equal chance of being wrongfully accused when two gay men are in, or a gay man and a straight man are in a room alone, and the straight man says the gay man was coming on to me. I mean, the public's perception is not of that yet, but is this something that ever concerns you? Back of your mind?
Not really with men. I've never had that issue with men before. I mean, I'm actually terrified to actually hit on guys because I'm more afraid of being rejected. But my experience with this hasn't been more sexual, but been more with bullying at school, with actually what turned out to be with women making accusations about me that had kind of petered out to be false, or and it put me in a really bad position to the point that I actually I'm having an off day because I was just on Twitter talking about how at the end of January I had wanted to kill myself because these accusations and the process of investigating them were so traumatic that it affected me and even my female co-host Emily Ewing to the point that, you know, she ended up dropping out of two classes. And as we're finding out, a lot of these allegations were incorrect or mischaracterized, and it's really pushed me to the edge. So with men, I haven't had that issue, but with women, I definitely have. Wow, and I've never had that before. I've never been afraid and terrified that something like that would happen to me, but it wasn't until just a few months ago that it did, and it really proved to me that you got to be very, very cautious about who you include in your life.
Oh, and are alone with.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, even when, here's the thing. If a process isn't fair, then, you know, people can, if someone doesn't intervene right away, then it gives plenty of time for a mob mentality to incur, for friend groups and to kind of gang up on individuals and to create like false evidence and start getting rumors around. So, I mean, I really think the most important thing is that people respond right away when a situation occurs. So that way, there's no time or room or opportunity for people to kind of create facts that just aren't there.
That's very interesting. I mean, and I'm sorry for what you're going through, and I didn't realize the emotional situation that you were in, or why you did mention it last week, but or why it was that case. But I certainly understand what false accusations. I had somebody falsely accuse me of something on the internet, a political individual accusing me of a crime, a long-standing history of crimes, which are just absolutely absurd. And it really, really got to me. So I'm sorry you're going through that, but your story is a fresh example of what can happen to somebody who is accused who didn't do it. The effect on somebody's life. As some people may know, I'm the creator of Ed the Sock, and we had a late night show that ran 14 years on broadcast TV around the world, and it included a hot tub, and it included in that hot tub women with bikinis who would sometimes take their tops off. We had go-go dancers for in and out of commercial breaks as our bumpers, and I always made a point of when I was never alone in a room with any of them. Not that I didn't trust them, but I just didn't know them. Like, you don't know people as well as you know them, as you think you know them, just because you work with them. And whenever I talked to them, my eyes never went below their eyes. Because on one hand, they were professionals and I was treating them as professionals. And on the other hand, I was always aware that it'd be very easy for somebody to accuse me of something that I absolutely did not do. Thankfully, that hasn't happened. But, you know, it was, even before all of this came up, it was in my head that we had such a large cast that I couldn't possibly know them all personally. I thought of them all more as people I needed to protect. They were my staff. They were my, you know, they weren't my prey. But there were a couple that turned out to be there were a couple of Looney Tunes in there. And I didn't discover that until later. So I did make sure that I was never alone. It just wasn't worth the risk. Now, the statement that, there's two statements that have come out. One is that I take objection to, and I'll go to Paul on this first, which is people say, believe the victim. And they say that when the person makes the allegation. In doing that, Paul, are they not saying, when someone makes an allegation and we're told to believe the victim, meaning the person making the allegation, are we not judge, jury at that point in time? Because we don't know that she actually is a victim yet. We don't know. The victim could be the person who's being falsely accused. So that's why I've always been very uncomfortable with this believe the victim thing, because you're automatically determining that this person is a victim when you've not seen any evidence or there's been no due process. Your thoughts?
Well, the evidence is the allegation, right? You go to court and you get people who are charged and they're innocent, and it, you know, I've defended lots of them, okay? So I don't just do driving. I've done these cases. And you get people who are charged and they're innocent, and they're sitting there in your office and going, where the hell is the evidence? Like, I didn't do anything. And you have to explain to them, the evidence is the allegation.
The allegation.
That person's going to come to court and testify, and that's going to be it. And it's going to be your word against her word, and somehow a judge is going to try and figure it out, and your life is on the line. So the bare fact of the allegation is the evidence that's coming out, right? And ultimately the person testifies about it if it ends up going to court. But if it doesn't go to court, it's just out there. You don't have to have corroborative evidence in the form of bruises or something like that. You just need the allegation. And when you think about, like, okay, you were aware of it back when you were dealing with your show and you had these people who were on. Being aware of it doesn't necessarily save you. You can try and protect yourself. But 20 years later, if you've got somebody, and, you know, we all operate under the assumption that everybody else is rational, right? And they're rational and they're generally good, and they're, because you're generally good, right? And you're rational and you're generally rational. So you take people mostly at their word, and you try and assume that their goals are good, but they're not for everybody. Some people are psycho. Some people are predators. Some people have just decided they just don't like you. Some people are having a problem in their life and they've decided to use it. Being aware doesn't really protect you. And what does really protect you? Nothing.
That's
nothing. And the further you get on in life, the more people you've interacted with. You know, I've had my law firm for 12 years. So I've had, you know, I've got right now like 6 or 7 legal assistants. So I probably had 30 legal assistants. What happens if one of them down the road, their life is going awry and they try and figure out, you know, somewhere to place the blame?
Yeah.
So the longer you're out there, the sort of the greater the danger. And I remember Peter Mansbridge asked the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, Antonio Lemaire, about that in some interview. And he said, well, I'm protected because I've kept a record of where I was every day. I've got my diary going back from the day I started. And that's true. That would help, because if somebody comes along and makes the allegation of a certain date, you've got some record that you've made. But of course, you could also leave some spaces blank and write in things after the fact, which we've seen police officers do. So that in itself also doesn't protect you.
Well, also because where you were doesn't say that's, so that's where you were. It doesn't talk, give a detailed accounting of what happened when you were in each of these places. And
sure,
I mean,
you could also on the day that you did it, did something, you could sit down and write that I did this and this and this to protect yourself. So like the contemporaneous record can be a false contemporaneous record, and you can have it going the same way for the other person. You can have somebody who's making false notes about what you're doing to try and set you up down the road. You can't assume that people are not predators. You know, I invite people to come and work in my office, right? Mm-hmm. I'm prepared to deal with people who are rational. But what if you get somebody who's, you know, decided to set out to target you? You never know. That's the threat that we all take. It's the risk we all take all the time.
And I think I think there's been we're in a period of overcorrection, in that for so long these cases were ignored, and the women who came forward were made to feel terrible about themselves, and so there's a bit of a correction in that, in the zealousness of the belief. But the idea that a woman can't lie for various reasons, just as men can, I think is kind of a sexist idea, because women and men are functionally, we're human beings with different plumbing. There are different social codes and things, programming that we've been given. But the idea that women are incapable of the kind of perfidy or planning that men are capable of, it strikes me as being sexist and not giving women their proper due as full human beings. Andrew Willis, you wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, there's a lot of respect I have for people who come out as victims against any sort of, like whether it is sexual or otherwise, any sort of impropriety. If you're telling the truth, it's going to be really hard. And if you're lying about it, it's going to be a lot harder. So either way, I still give anyone credit for coming out and speaking up. But in my case, I never thought this was something that would happen to me or I would understand in this way. But I definitely believe that gender does have a role to play in bias when it comes to allegations. And I was always on the side of the fence that was like, no, we need to support all, we need to support women a lot harder than men because of, past improprieties and just, the agency of power. Women didn't have that power that they do now. But in my case, I started to see how, you can really overstep and actually, there could be perceived bias in that case. So in my case, it was, a few women who had made allegations, girls, students at school. One of them had allegedly said that I had grabbed her arm. Another person said I was going to set their car on fire, and like all these wild things that had eventually turned out to be incorrect, or that it was a confusion as the investigator was looking into this, that they were confused and it wasn't quite right. But again, so there was these women that had made these claims. And then the person who is tasked with looking into this individual who her specialty is violence against women and gender-based violence. And the investigator who was hired in my case is also an investigator who looks at gender-based violence. So in my case, I started realizing that, is this going a little too far? Is this, the fact that women are making allegations, does it have to go to 0 to 100 on something? And then it has to become something that is about gender. Really at that case, no, I don't think really that's really what any of this is all about. In my example, maybe in some other people's too. So I definitely feel like gender kind of has a role to play in it. Again, because I'm a man and because allegations are brought towards me, even as a gay male, isn't necessarily, I just felt like some people had something to prove really in their own work, to champion their own work and their own cause. And that kind of really frustrated me.
I can understand that. And this is sort of related, but, I'm very close with somebody who was harassed by a woman who was unbalanced, and harassed over the course of a few years with threats and with stalking, showing up at places, knocking her really hard. And, were you there? It was very obvious everyone what was going on. And so eventually she went to the police to say, look, I can't stand this harassment anymore. It was online, it was in person. And so the officer took depositions from people and then went and talked to this other person. And then came back and said, this is just two women are having a cat fight who don't like each other. Like just completely ignored all the evidence.
Right.
A case of a woman who was a victim of a woman, and it was because of this gender bias of this notion of a cat fight. That was just unjust.
Well, it sounds it seems lately, sorry to cut in.
Yes, Ryan, please.
It seems lately as though we as a society, as you mentioned earlier, are overcorrecting in the belief of, you know, believe all women, believe all victims, and everything like that, but we're still applying that belief to the old gender stereotypes. Are men are sex starved and can't help themselves, and of course they're going to attack women, and it's easy to believe them, and those accusations just never go away. You know, my wife is a teacher, and there was a teacher within her scope that was accused of a relationship with a student. It was completely unfounded. The student had said eventually admitted that they made up the whole thing. In the meantime, the teacher had been suspended and never came back to work. That guy lost his career in a tenured position with a pension and everything else because the girl was getting in trouble at home for other things, and she laid the blame on this guy and said, you know, it's because he's touching me. And that was her excuse for the behavior that she was taking at home.
There's an important thing there.
Yes, Paul.
If I can.
Yes, Paul, please.
My issue about this, categorizing this as an overcorrectness, is a problem because we're failing to recognize the mechanism and come up with a method to deal with this. So if we overcorrect, some men will suffer. Okay. If we undercorrect, some cases will be not taken seriously. Either way, there's going to be circumstances where there's innocent men who are suffer these allegations, and there will be people who make these allegations who are not taken seriously. And we are failing in our mechanism, in my view. I mean, we have two different standards in court that we use, right? If you're suing somebody, it's on a balance of probabilities. If it's a criminal charge, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's basically it. That's our mechanism.
Well, and it goes back to what we saw in newspapers. The correction's never on the front page. The correction is always buried. When you think of the Duke Lacrosse program, just saying that, I'm willing to bet that there are people out there hearing this that will think rape. When you think of the Duke Lacrosse program, because there were four players who were eventually exonerated by a woman who said, I made everything up. They were charged with kidnapping, with sexual assault, with rape, a variety of charges over 4 or 5 years before they were finally exonerated. But when you think of Duke Lacrosse, rape comes to mind. And so those allegations never go away.
So, Paul, please continue. Were you finished, or you have more you wanted to add to that?
Well, I just the problem that we've got is that we really have no mechanism of dealing with it. It's not just a pendulum swing issue here, right? We have no method of dealing with it. We have no way of addressing this. That if you're a complainant, if you're a person who's a legitimate victim, that you can come out of this by making this allegation or dealing with this and come out satisfied somehow. Or if you're the person who's the alleged perpetrator, that if you're innocent, that you can come out and feel that you're somehow been vindicated somehow. It just never happens. Like we don't have a common ground that we can meet. It's not a pendulum swinging where we're going to, you know, get to eventually a good place here, because it's he said, she said in the end. And no matter what, it's destructive. And so I worry about the categorization of the pendulum swinging. I mean, on the one hand, I worry about the people who suffer when the pendulum swings too far. But on the other hand, we do not, in law or in our society, have a mechanism to deal with the two different sides of this.
Do you have something in mind?
No, I got nothing.
Okay.
You know, and neither does anybody else.
I just want to add in here, when I talked about the pendulum and the overcorrection, I was referring more to the reaction of the public than the court systems.
Well, it's just generally. I mean, I think you can apply it in the court system too. Look, we've got judges now who are about to get forced training on sexual assault cases by legislation, right? Mm-hmm. And what is this like? How do we have this when they're independent judges that they're going to have by legislation compulsory training on sex assault cases? And what is going to be acceptable for the compulsory training? Is it just because we don't think enough people are being convicted that we're doing this?
Well, some judges have made some remarkably ignorant comments during cases. And of course, they're a small percentage, but I think they're the ones that catch people's attention. And so governments are forced to act.
Pendulum swinging.
In a sense. Andy wanted to add something to what you're saying, Paul.
I think part of the mechanism that's failing too is that people just can't afford representation, and there's just not enough advocacy out there for individuals. So, I mean, even for myself, like, I'm at the whim of, you know, the advocacy that is provided by a university, which I believe is provided to protect the university and the institution from, you know, having anything negative come out about them. So in my case, you know, you go through the strains, like, what do you do if you don't have $60,000 to represent yourself like your friend, Stephen? You know, I mean, that's kind of like, what do you do? Do you just sit there and have your whole life destroyed? Like, what do you do?
That's a fine question. My friend was 20,000. Paul's was 60,000.
Right. What do you do? I mean, like, you're at the whim of basically a system that is broken and that may not be there to protect you, but rather to protect themselves. So you just have to fight the best you can. And in my case, choose to live to see the next day. I mean, I have been pushed to the point where I was going to jump in front of a bus.
No,
I was with my friend Emily, and I had planned to do this. And if it wasn't for having her there, I don't know what I would have done. And
Andy,
I mean, that's the truth.
I don't know what I would have done if I'd heard that had happened to you. Because while you and I are, I'm on one coast, you're on the other. I feel so close to you, and I care about you, and that would have devastated me.
But that's the thing. We live in this culture that's all about bullying and reacting to it, and some people, you know, are out there trying to prove that something's happening just in order to say that we're coming down hard on something. And I think that's and I think that's the problem that we live in. It's the culture we live in, is that there's this overcorrection. There's this, and you know, I never thought this was something that could happen to me. I mean, is there any better ally for a woman than a gay male? I mean, I don't think so. But I think that people can be pushed to complete destruction of themselves and of their communities, and it's really bad. We have to be very careful about how we approach accusations.
Okay, Hafiz, we haven't heard from you for a little bit, so you've heard the conversation. What would you like to add before I move on to the last question?
I just want to add that, Andy, we love you, and you're part of this family more than anything, so please always be here, because if it isn't for your little bits in this show, I don't think we'd be laughing as much, and this world needs more Andy.
And Andy, we're here. Andy, you have our emails. We're here for you as well when you need us.
I know. And that's part of the weird shame, too, is that, like, when you're honest about these things, like, I waited a while to talk. Yeah, you feel ashamed, right, about help, right? Like, help is, like, seeking help, finding help is something to be ashamed of. So anyone listening, like, don't be afraid to do it. Like, just find help. Find help the best way you can.
Your friends will be so happy that you reached out and gave them the opportunity to help you. You will not be judged in a negative way. You won't be.
Because I guarantee you that there's men and women listening and that may be listening that are going to feel like there's no hope. There's nothing. It's done. It's over for you. There's nothing you can do. And the only thing you can do is keep living. Because I know in Emily's case, that same thing happened to her, where she was at a point in her life where she wanted to kill herself too. And, you know, she didn't, and she chose not to. And because she was alive, I chose not to. So you have to just keep living whatever you're going through, whether you're right or wrong, so you can just keep living so other people can too. And that's all I have to really say.
Bro, I wish I could give you a hug right now. Just
you know that, thank you for that honesty. I mean, that is so brave, what you just said. And I thank you for having that courage, Andy, and for actually pointing out something. I mean, that was very astute, that because Emily chose to stay here and not end her life, you chose not to. And so she, in saving her own life, she saved your life. And I know Hafiz and I, who deal with you most regularly, we couldn't fathom that, you know, we're both, I think I can speak for Hafiz when I say, we're both terribly affected and sad that you're in this space. But just know that you have friends who believe in you, you have friends who love you, and friends who believe you in this situation too. So you'll get through it, and we're there for you. Now, Hafiz, go. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
You know, I think there's a lot of truth that has come out in this conversation, and at the end of the day, there is always a victim, and no matter what happens, whether it's a positive accusation or a negative accusation. And I think at the end of the day, if we know what the truth is at the end of a situation, we have a duty as a society to make sure that the end of the day, the victim's story is true and told. And that if it is a false accusation, that this person is exonerated. We live in an age where media takes control of a narrative. And once that narrative ends and does not go the way, they're already on to the next story. Meanwhile, there's a person left struggling,
broken,
and living in a half-truth world. No matter what happens, people will always think of you as that horrible person, whether even if they know that you did not do it. And I believe every media outlet that pushes a story that then turns out to have gone the other way has a responsibility and duty to rectify that.
Paul, this is sort of an aside, but as a lawyer, I have a, he's an acquaintance, I would say, who was charged with sexual assault, charged with rape by the daughter of a friend. I know this person in that I've seen him operating with men and women, and he is mostly shy. He treats women in a very old school fashion. He yells like crazy at men. He will excoriate men, but women, he always treated like ladies. He just, it was just who he is. He was charged with rape. The judge in his verdict said, I have to find you not guilty, but you probably did it. Is that not improper?
I always think it's improper. Judges do that with some regularity. So they say, basically, I think on a balance of probabilities, you did it, but beyond a reasonable doubt, I'm not going to convict you because I can't go that far. And I think they sometimes do that because they think they're doing the complainant a favor, saying, you know, blaming the justice system instead of actually sort of manning up and dealing with it. I don't like it when I see that. I've had judges do that in, you know, when I'm in court. It's always bothered me. I think it's a problem. But, you know, on the other hand, like, there's lots of people who are wrongly convicted too, right? Lots of people who are wrongly convicted. DNA just exposed that in the last decade or so, how many people have been wrongly convicted. Judges, when it comes to assessing credibility, according to Malcolm Gladwell's recent book, they're right 56% of the time. So they're wrong 44% of the time. So when you sit down and think about, like, has court resolved the problem? Can you say that, you know, you can be really supportive of this complainant in the end because the guy's been convicted? I don't come to that conclusion, and I'm in the justice system.
Interesting. Okay.
But the, I don't like it when judges make those comments. I always think that it's superfluous, it's unnecessary, and I don't think
you
should ever be in there.
Well, you've ruled somebody not guilty, but guilty.
Found you not guilty, but I'm going to defame you as I do it.
Yeah, and this person can't get that out of their internet search either. I was mentioning at the top of the show that the friend of mine who, thanks to security cameras at a supermarket, was able to prove without a shadow of a doubt that he was not 2 hours away assaulting two women, as they had alleged. Thankfully, he had actual proof. It wasn't just, as you mentioned, Paul, the allegation. There was actual proof that he could not be in two places at once. So these women very clearly made up this story. Now, but he paid $20,000 in legal fees and distress to him and so on, and they walked away scot-free. Should, in cases where it's not a mistake or something happened, there was a miscommunication. In a case, clear-cut case like this, where it was obvious that these women were lying, they were backing each other up and lying because there was documentary evidence that proved that they were lying, should there be some form of punishment as some form of deterrence from somebody coming forward with something that is just so absolutely provably false or could be provably false? Paul, I'll go to you first.
Couple things there. What would have happened to your poor friend had there not been the video, had he not been able to find that? You know, he could have been convicted. He'd be in jail. He'd be labeled a sex offender just because he couldn't get the video. There's lots of people who don't have those resources or don't know, don't have the video because they weren't somewhere where they can prove that. And that's unfortunate. He probably would have been convicted, but for the video, or, you know, I shouldn't say that, but he might have been faced mm-hmm. that possibility. Should there be some punishment? Well, it's mischief to file a false statement, a false complaint, right? It's a criminal code charge. Is anybody ever charged with it? Pretty much never. It's very, very rare that happens. And when they do, the prosecution has to look at it and say to themselves, can I prove this beyond a reasonable doubt? Well, we went through the whole process of approving a charge because we thought we could prove the opposite beyond a reasonable doubt. And now I've got to try and prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a very hard, it's a hard one to meet. So of course your friend could sue. Defamation doesn't pay very well in Canada. Even if you do defame someone, if people think that it was, you know, if the court comes to the conclusion that right-minded people might not have believed it in the first place, even if you've been defamed, you're not going to get any money. So, you know, there's not a whole lot to discourage somebody from making a false complaint.
Okay.
Be nice if there was, I guess.
Okay. And that's what I want to go around the horn and ask. Finally, Ryan, do you think that in clear-cut cases like the one I just described, where it was obvious that these two women were lying to cause problems, or if somebody comes forward eventually and says, yes, I lied, I made the whole thing up, should there be some form of legal punishment or something, some form of deterrence and for the damage this person has done to the other person's life?
Well, I think certainly, and Paul could probably speak to it more, that they should be open and liable for a civil case.
I think that's what he said, is that they are. Yeah.
But like he said, not often does that happen. Adding false charges to that, or false accusation charges, would start to be a deterrent. But again, when you look at these people, I mean, Paul mentioned earlier when he said you can't assume that everyone is sane, is the threat of a charge going against you going to be enough to deter you if you're already, you know, unbalanced enough to make these accusations falsely?
Well, but it may not. Okay, if it doesn't deter, then just for justice for coming to the courts and lying and ruining somebody's life, it's not a deterrent, but as an absolute form of punishment for what they did, do you think that something should be investigated or that they should be charged under mischief, as Paul said, is a possibility?
I think if they end up being charged under mischief, again, it doesn't make it doesn't make the victim of the crime whole in any way, shape or form. I think the only thing that is there is the civil case. I don't know that charges against people that bring false accusations are either going to stop them from doing it or really reform them from doing it in the future. I don't know that it's kind of any kind of vengeance for the victim that, yes, this person accused me and now they're in jail. I don't know what satisfaction.
It's a funny thing when it plays out, you know, when a complainant goes to the police to make a false allegation, they've persuaded themselves that they're going to go do this for whatever reason. Okay. And they're sitting there in the police detachment and partway through their discussion, as they're giving their statement to the police, usually recorded, the police officers will sort of half warn them that it's an offense, but they're already so deep into it at this point that they usually double down. I've watched this in statements where, you know, the police, it's already now a threat, right? If you back out of this now, you're going to be charged. You could back out of this. I think that you might be lying. I don't quite believe you, but you're going to be charged. So suddenly the you know, the person who's making this, the false complaint, and I'm not just talking about sex assaults or assaults or something like this. It's like, it happens in a variety of different complaints, then doubles down. And, you know, we'll add facts that are not necessarily facts, but something to, you know, to build the story. So it's a bit of a problem using the threat of, you know, there are repercussions for the false statement, because in the end, all it does is encourage more of the false statement, because now you're the complainant worried about, well, I don't want to get in trouble. I just wanted to get him in a little bit of trouble. I didn't realize this was going to get so big. I just wanted to, you know, teach him a lesson or whatever. And now here we are, this is becoming a gigantic thing, and I can't back away from it because I'll get charged with an offense.
Oh, you may, yeah. And of course, the civil suit option versus the person being charged with something. In a civil suit, the person who was wrongly accused, they have to incur expenses. Whereas if the Crown, you know, prosecutes, they don't. Andy Willis, thoughts? Should there be some kind of should mischief charges against people who have been proven to have been liars in their accusations on these things be levied more often?
Well, you know, if you had asked me that 6 months ago, I would have said yes. But if you ask me now, I would say no. And first of all, I want to say Paul Doroshenko is a brilliant legal mind and very compassionate and has been just, he's awesome. And everyone on this show has been great. And I don't know what I'd do without it, because it really does make my weeks feel a lot better, especially through really challenging times. So thank you, boys. I really appreciate it. But I would say no, having gone through this process myself, there is, of course, that need, that desire inside to just want to punish people and make them, you know, admit that they did wrong. But having been pushed to the edge, even to the edge of my own life, I realized that there's no one wins in any of this. And the only thing you can do is just be compassionate, just try to create some sort of kindness. So no, I don't think it's right. I don't think it's worthwhile. I don't think it does anything to want to cause any disruption or chaos for any other people. The best thing you can do is just live on with compassion and care and just try to improve your life and the life of others around you. And that's the best thing you can do, because everyone's going to have their own story and their own life. And there's no point in you trying to mire them even further.
And that's very interesting that,
Because these, who, you know, what people come from pain, right? All this comes from pain and some sort of trauma. So, you know, if someone came at me with false accusations or whatever, I mean, clearly they're going through some kind of pain and trauma. And, you know, whether you've experienced it or it's caused you further pain or trauma, I mean, to have to do that to them just worsens the situation and reinforces their own, you know, belief of hatred or unkindness. Like for myself as a gay male, when people come at me with homophobia, I don't want to go at them and try to penalize them or punish them. I want to make sure that, like, you know, they're aware that this is inappropriate, because the worst thing you can do in that case is reinforce their hatred of you, thinking that you're coming back at them, you know, in a negative way or in a way that reinforces their hatred of gay people. So, I don't think it's right.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that 6 months ago you weren't a victim of this and you would have said yes. Now you are a victim of this and
yeah,
you're saying no.
I know.
That's an interesting, it's an interesting journey. Very interesting.
Weird. Yeah.
Okay. And it sounds like what you're saying is, it's similar to something I was taught in Hebrew school about a Jewish sage named Hillel, who he gave some money to somebody who said that he was in dire straits and, you know, needed the money. And then a friend came along and said, Hillel, this man is actually very rich. He's just ripped you off. And Hillel said, well, if he decided that he was going to come to me and lie and say he needed money, obviously he needed it for something more than I needed it.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
so,
that's giving him a little bit more credit than necessary. I think he may not have needed it. He might have just been a bad guy. There are some
well,
bad guys out there.
Meaning that there's something wrong. Yeah, that they have to live in that. They have to live in that body, and they have to live with being who they are.
Well, that's the thing. And you have to be. You know, you have to go through life. You can't just become a cynic about everything. You have to go through life and deal with it. And unfortunately, if you're the victim of the false complaint, probably your best thing to do is not seek vindication, not seek that the world be made fair or perfectly correct. You're probably better off just to buckle down and to continue to be the good person you are.
Because okay. Yeah.
In the end, I think it's of greater value to you as a human.
Okay.
Can Hafiz? I say?
Yes, Andy, go ahead. Then Hafiz.
No, I was just going to say, like, my final word on it is Aristotle. He said tyrannies are destroyed within. So when we go, like, when we go towards something, I mean, this speaks to basically the what this is all about, is that, you know, we're seeking to make things fair or whole, or to cause someone else pain or be vindictive. I mean, that's, we need to find a way of dealing with these things and we have to deal with ourselves, really. We just have to deal with ourselves and deal with whatever we're going through before we can really deal with other people. And I mean, there's just other ways of correcting things without having it be so vindictive and hard on other people. Sorry, okay. I rambled a bit, but.
Well, no, you made sense. You made sense.
Yeah.
Hafiz?
The tyranny isn't what's out there. It's what's going on inside.
Inside of us. Okay. Hafiz?
Sorry, I thought my mic was off mute. My final thoughts on this?
Thought about whether you think somebody, whether the mischief charge should be levied against people who have provably either admitted that they've made up the charge or physical evidence has proved.
You know what? I'm sorry. If you have vindictively taken out something that could have ruined someone's life, then you need to face some comeuppance. If anything, you should face the same sentence you were about to convict the innocent person to.
Well, okay. I don't know how long that sentence would be, but I am with you in that. I guess it's because I know two guys who are really good guys who were completely wrongly accused, and it cost them. And these women just walked away scot-free. One of them walked away after being convicted of perjury and lying to police, and claimed that the police were against her, and then started a campaign against the police. But I think that that where it is provable or it admitted that somebody did that it was a false accusation, I think that there should be legal ramifications that don't come from the civil case where someone has to pay money. But if you're gonna try to ruin somebody's life with a bullshit story, then you deserve to have that bullshit visited back on you when it comes out that your story is untrue. That's just my view.
I'd be curious to know if your friends, the two individuals, would really like to go and testify in a criminal case and relive the whole fucking thing again.
Yeah, they would.
I don't think my friend would. I think he just wants to move on with his life.
Well, one of my friends still can't get his name off of an several international websites guys who were rapists. So would he like to go and get? Yeah, I think he absolutely would. But you know what, guys? Usually we've got good camaraderie. We joke around about things as well as talking about serious things. Today we address this, I think, in the proper sober tones. And I appreciate everybody's contribution to this. I repeat again that this has not been a discussion in any way that's trying to diminish the fact that there are real women victims of physical and sexual assault, harassment, and that for decades, generations, they have been mistreated by society, by the court systems. They've been made to feel they're victims, and they've been made to feel like they themselves did something wrong when they bring something forward. There's no question of that. And this topic was not about people who are legitimate victims of this. This was about people who are not, people who are falsely accused. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. I'm sure that this will start some conversations somewhere, and that's a good thing, because these are the kind of things that we really should be talking about, as opposed to whether the Prime Minister has a beard or not. I want to thank Andy Willis for not jumping out in front of that bus, and I'm not being flippant. Andy, we need you here, okay? We need you on this show, and we need you on this world. You bring a brightness to my Sundays, and to every time we interact. And I'm sure that I am not the only person that feels that way. So thank you for your contribution today. Thank you for your honesty. I want to thank you for being here, and I want you here again next week. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. And Andy can be found on Andyland Radio. Tell them where to find you.
You can go to every Wednesday, 10:30 Pacific, 12:30 Central on CITR 101.9 FM and andylandradio.com.
Okay. I want to thank Ryan Ballantyne for joining us. Ryan, if people want to comment to you, do you want them to? And if you do, where can they send a message?
Yeah, I always welcome engagement. Pretty much every public social media profile I have are BB Can Ryan. You can follow my Beard Brothers podcast on the TV Co Network, which is every Monday night where I discuss kind of the world of reality TV and everything that goes on in it.
Okay, thank you. So repeat that again. Where can they find you? BB?
BB Can, BBCAN Ryan. On Twitter and Instagram, and on TV Co is a TV kind of app where we talk about TV.
Okay.
And you can find that in any of the app stores.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Paul Doroshenko, your sage advice and your experience has been invaluable in this program today. Thank you for that. And where can people find you either for legal purposes or because they want to listen to your country music? Because
well, if you want to track me down and just find out, you know, where I stand on things, you can find me on Twitter at Paul Doroshenko, Doroshenko. This week I was interviewed by CBC about the protests, and I said, you know, you're entitled to protest in this country, and there's limits to protesting, but after that, I had people phoning my office to spew racist rants and things like that. So if you want to phone my office to yell at me or swear at me or to spew racist rants, it's 604-685-8889, the office number. And you can just ask for me because it's like the rest of the staff really don't want to hear it.
But, okay. You know,
I'm what's the best to time been, to call been, for a racist rant?
Yeah, is there a good time to call?
Email me or tell me that my mother was raped by a dirty Russian or whatever. Oh. You know, I get those things every week or so. So just 604-685-8889, Acumen Law Corporation, Vancouver.
Okay.
Call it right now.
And for, yeah, our operators are standing by. Paul, and for your country music, I wasn't joking. You are a country musician. Where can they find you?
I have two songs that are up on iTunes now. You can look for me or you can look for Prairie Paul. There's Lawyer Told Me Not to Talk to You. And then there's In and Out, both songs by my band, the Accutones. It's separate from law, but there's a legal thing in each of my songs because I live the life of a lawyer.
So it's almost like Schoolhouse Rock, but for law.
Exactly. Classic lawyer country. Okay. Is the genre that I'm trying to generate and create interest in, and I'm hoping, you know, that I'll be moving to Nashville in the next 10 months and I'll be, you know, make that my new career.
A star is born.
Yeah. And we'll say we knew you when. Hafiz Noorani, digital analyst and consultant who has been invaluable not just in producing this program but in supporting the entire FU network with advice. His professional advice, his professional consulting, professional analysis, and friendship. Thank you for joining us again, Hafiz.
You are very welcome. And to everyone out there for listening, thank you so much. We love it.
They can find you on Twitter at Feezy Does It.
Yes. Come yell at me all you like. Accuse me of all the things you think I say and disagree with me. I'm here for you.
Okay, so if you call Paul's office and get a busy signal, then go to at Feezy Does It on Twitter and just spew it at Hafiz.
Yeah, give me everything. Give me all those emotions you're feeling. Play the race card. Go right ahead. I'm here for you.
All right.
Actually, Hafiz, my favorite part about your Twitter feed is the race guessing. Everybody does the race guessing.
I've been a white nationalist this week. I've been an Iranian. I've been Turkmenistani, I think. I don't know. I've been South African. It's kind of like where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? It's where in the world was Hafiz born?
Well, they've obviously caught into the fact that you are a CIA master of disguise. So, all right. And I want to thank all of you for listening. If you support this program and these kinds of programs and you support FU Politics and fund the FU Network, taking out the bullshit from dialogue and having serious, but not taking the barriers away from regular Canadians to be able to listen to issues, understand them, participate in them as well. If you want to support us here, you can do it at Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/FU Network TV. It's a monthly subscription that starts at $1, and every dollar adds up. And if you want to just give a one-time donation, which is very much appreciated, you can do that at PayPal, and you direct it towards our address at PayPal, which is funetworktv@gmail.com. And you guys have been increasing your Patreon support. You've been increasing your PayPal support. We appreciate it, especially since our laptop is still dead, and I need to get that either fixed or replaced. So we appreciate you supporting this free, independent media. So thank you very much. I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been Mensplaining on Fund the FU Network's FU Politics channel. And think about what we had to say, and have yourselves a good week. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, let's all say all of us. This is Fun, the FU Network.